Well, howdy ho there, record collectors. Do you know about Seems Easy record jacket repair strips? Seems Easy repair strips are something that every record collector and crate digger should have handy. Seems Easy repairs seam splits from the inside, so your records and your vinyl collection stays beautiful, and that $2 record you found at a yard sale will look and act as new. Simply go to seamseasy.com. That's two Z's, seamseasy.com. Get a baggie of these record jacket repair strips. Fix your record jackets and keep a few of these repair strips handy for when you need them. Record stores and vinyl dealers, you definitely need these record jacket repair strips, as they'll turn a $2 record into a $20 record every time. Grab a bag at seamseasy.com and refresh your vinyl collections. Seems easy, don't it? Well, that's because it is. And with that, let's start this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, hey everyone, it's Nate here. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for downloading. Thank you for enjoying and subscribing to The Vinyl Guide podcast. This is the podcast for vinyl record collectors and music fans. And this week we are talking all about Van Halen, the bootlegs, the collectible vinyl, and heaps more with Mike Cassis, a serious Van Halen collector who has some of the rarest Van Halen vinyl in existence. And it's a pretty incredible collection. Mike walks us through his prized possessions, how he got them, and we talk about the Van Halen collectors community and even some of the vinyl records and Van Halen doodads that all of us can keep an eye out for. Now, I want to be absolutely clear on this point. I love Van Halen. I absolutely adore that band. They were the soundtrack to my youth. They were the Beatles of my formative years. And I can talk about Van Halen for hours at a time. My love for them has only continued to grow over the years, especially now when it's looking more and more likely like we're not going to get any new music from them anytime soon. It's really making my brain harken back to when they were active and reminds me of how good we had it, that we could count on the Van Halen brothers to visit our town every year or two, and those were truly the good old days. However, those feelings and emotions are alive and well with Mike and the rest of the Van Halen collector community, and we're going to walk through a ton of that Van Halen history with you today. And if you're a Van Halen fan, collector, or even just a casual listener, there's a few other episodes of the Vinyl Guide podcast you're going to want to check out, including episode 188, Talking Van Halen with Greg Renoff, one of the foremost Van Halen aficionados amongst us. Greg authored the magnificent book Van Halen Rising and recently brought us the Ted Templeman autobiography, which is killer and available now. So we talked to Greg Renoff all about Van Halen on episode 188 of The Vinyl Guide. And coincidentally, exactly 100 episodes before that, we spoke to Van Halen manager Noel Monk, episode 88 of The Vinyl Guide, where he told us a lot of never-before-shared stories of his babysitting duties of Van Halen during the David Lee Roth years. That's episode 88 of The Vinyl Guide. Also, check out episode 49 of The Vinyl Guide, the story of Van Halen's album 1984, as well as an exclusive interview with 1984 album cover designer Margot Zina Haas, who tells us the whole story of the band choosing the album cover. That's episode 49 of The Vinyl Guide. And if Van Halen music is your thing, check out these other episodes with other artists on The Vinyl Guide, including episode 66 with Rudy Sarzo, talking all about his time with Ozzy, Quiet Riot, and Randy Rhoads. That's episode 66 of The Vinyl Guide. Episode 92 with Deep Purple's Ian Gillan. Episode 144 with Zakk Wylde. Episodes 121 and 177 with Dave Menichetti of Y&T, plus heaps more, available wherever you get your podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or simply at thevinylguide.com. And finally, before the interview, I'm here to ask you a favor. If you are able to help support this podcast, please head over to patreon.com/vinylguide, sign up, and get access to our exclusive content, extended episodes, and more. That's if you could spare $5 or $10 a month for the show. Now, if you're unable to do that, I totally get it. I then ask you to please share this podcast on your social media and write me up a nice review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you got this episode. Those actions are totally free. Only cost you a few minutes or so, and they mean so much to us here at The Vinyl Guide. So please either sponsor us at patreon.com/vinylguide or share these episodes and write us a nice review. That would be brilliant and most appreciated. Alrighty, that is it for the upfronts. Let's talk about Van Halen vinyl and collectible bootlegs with Michael Cassis, author of the book Underground Van Halen Vinyl, A Pictorial History, Van Halen Bootlegs on Vinyl. Link is in this episode page. Pick up a copy. Let's go. Today on The Vinyl Guide, we are welcoming Mike Cassis, Van Halen collector. And really, the first question, Mike, are you or were you in any way connected to the band, or are you 100% civilian?
No, 100% civilian.
All right. Because you've got some really incredible stuff in your collection. So I'm just wondering, in some way, you know, you must have some sort of insider track or something, or just the Van Halen collectible community is quite tight. What is, before we start talking about the one-offs, what is the Van Halen collectors community like?
It's actually quite diverse. We started, back in the day when I started collecting, there wasn't the internet or anything like that. It was, send that self-addressed stamped envelope. Mm. And I hope to God that they still had the record by the time a month went by. Now with the internet, we've started up a Facebook page of strictly Van Halen collectors, and it is a tight group. We've got about 1,000 people, 800 to 1,000, but out of that, I'd say about 10-15% of us are pretty hardcore collectors.
And I'm assuming it's not just records, but t-shirts, tour posters, that sort of thing?
Well, everybody seems to have their niche, so we've got guys in there that are poster addicts, we've got guys that are vinyl addicts, they're picks. Guitars themselves, you're right, t-shirts, and the list goes on. It just depends on what your niche is, I guess.
What's one of the, I won't say stranger items, but what are one of the collector corners that you thought was really interesting and didn't expect?
Jewelry, I think. A lot of bands put out belt buckles and or necklaces or earrings and things along those lines. And I never really looked at that as being a collector's item, but the more people I got to know, I'm finding out more and more that, yeah, it is a collector's item. Guitar picks, I never really looked at that as being a collector's item. But boy, if you go back to where the band started in 78 and start collecting every year or every tour up to today, it certainly becomes a collector's item.
Wow. Okay. So I would imagine each year or each tour would have a different pick design. And there's like some sort of guide on how to tell an authentic pick from, say, 1978 from a bootleg or counterfeit pick.
Correct. And I, for me, I don't know the differences on them. It's not something that I collect. I guarantee you that the people that are within our Facebook community can tell you the difference between a counterfeit 78, and they are out there in abundance, and the real deal. If you have the real deal and can verify it as such, believe me, you got a few dollars on your hands.
Now I go down the road of Van Halen vinyl, and one of the things I've noticed, I absolutely love Van Halen. They were my Beatles growing up, and from our conversation episode 188 with Greg Renoff, we talked about Van Halen collectible vinyl. And I originally thought there were only a few out there, the Merry Melodies record and not a lot else. What other collectible records are there that a record collector such as myself should keep an eye out for?
Wow, You know, you're right. There wasn't, it doesn't appear that there is a whole lot out there. It's almost like they took the same route as Led Zeppelin, where they didn't really give anything to the fan extra, you know, colored vinyl, things along those lines. You're right. Merry Melodies, Looney Tunes on red vinyl is not super collectible, but it's fairly collectible. There was a rumor out there on that going around that Elmer Fudd was on there, but they were also saying Porky Pig. I've never found the other. It's always been Elmer Fudd. But you could look at, start looking at colored vinyl, picture discs. There's several of those. The 1984 picture discs are out there. They're from Mexico. And the cool thing about the 1984 picture disc is that Mexico that year, unfortunately, had a huge earthquake and it destroyed a lot of buildings. Some of those buildings housed a lot of records that were supposed to be distributed out around the world. And when those buildings got destroyed, they destroyed a lot of records. And some of those were the 1984 picture discs. And one of my holy grails, if I can ever find it, the 1984 on red vinyl. I've only seen one or two, and boy, I just cannot get my hands on that one.
Oh, okay. So the Mexico pressing of 1984 from, I'm guessing, 1984, the picture disc is out there, but a bit hard to find. But what you're saying is the 1984 Mexican red vinyl of 1984 is extremely hard to find, extremely rare.
Correct. Yeah, it's like I said, I've only seen one. I've got a lead on a second one, maybe it's the same one. I'm not sure, but boy, it just, that one's really rare. I'm having a hard time finding that one. You know, there's some picture discs, those cutout discs, the shaped ones that came out of England. There's a couple of those that were made. The cool thing is on those, once I got those, I ended up finding some that were not cut out. So you had the shaped disc that was cut out or stamped out. And then I was able to find two that weren't stamped out yet, and they're just clear around it. So you start getting into the collectibles. It's kind of neat. You go, hey, I'm looking at getting all the vinyl. Well, now I want to get the picture disc. Well, now I want to get, and you start narrowing it down on your collection.
And the same goes for like test pressings and things like that. I've seen in the past few years, there's been some really interesting acetates and test pressings from early Van Halen come out on the market. Are you familiar with those?
Yeah, I had collected Van Halen for a lot of years, about 30 years now, and I had all the test pressings up through 5150, and I sold them all because I sold my collection at one time, so I've been trying to get them all back. I haven't been able to do so yet for the test pressings. Acetates, the lacquer acetates, those are extremely difficult to come by. I've got five or six of them. I've got Dancing in the Streets. I have both versions of that. I've got a couple off of Fair Warning. I have Dreams off of 5150, but they're extremely hard to find. I do have the one that's out there that I'm glad I got was Jamie's Crying, mainly because it came off that first album. I think that is, to go back that far and find something that should have been probably thrown away or remain on the shelf is pretty incredible.
When you get these acetates, when you get these early one-off pressings, do you also get the story behind them? Like, whose was it? What was its the lineage of that particular record?
I'm trying to, yeah. We were able to get our hands on – I got my hands on the – Van Halen 1, and it is a sequence tester. They wanted to see how the songs would set up on the album. And we all know it starts out with Running with the Devil and then goes to Eruption and then goes into You Really Got Me. On this particular acetate, all the songs are out of sequence. They were testing a different order. That is really interesting to find, and it's very unusual to hear. I tried to trace the lineage on that, and I really couldn't. A gentleman in New Jersey sold it to me. He got it from somebody in Arizona. Greg Renoff was kind enough to show Don Landy, the engineer, the record, and he gave me a little bit of background of what studio that was cut in, engineered in, and was able to say, yep, that's the real deal. I think that's my one of my my pearls that I've got that I just, wow, I'm glad I have that.
Is that a recent acquisition, or was that something you collected years and years ago and didn't go out with the sale of your collection?
No, that didn't go out. I found that one about 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago. I came across that.
How did you get into Van Halen? I mean, obviously you started hearing it on the radio, probably like the rest of us, but at what point did it strike you as, wow, this is something special, and you started investing even more and more time and money collecting items around this band?
I was collecting records in the late 70s, and I wasn't collecting as we look at collecting now, you know, looking for those tidbits. I live in a very rural area. So to me at the time, record collecting was, hey, you've got 30 disco albums and 30 nobody ever heard of records. I bought them all. About August of 78, I'm going through our local Kmart and I seen the Van Halen one and I thought, wow, that's a cool album cover. The power of an album cover, right? Mm-hmm. And I bought it. And man, I wore that album out. I bought the cassette for my car and I wore that out. Well, then I started collecting. 81, I heard of an album called Die Laughing by Van Halen. I'd never heard of that before. What is this about? Well, I called the guy that had it in Missouri, and he gave me a very small class on bootleg records. And boy, that pegged my interest big time. So I started collecting everything I could that was bootleg. Self-addressed stamped envelopes were going out the door like crazy. So that's really where my start on collecting this band got going.
From bootlegs. Okay. I guess it's the power of the thing that you can't have becomes the thing that you want the most.
Oh, you bet.
So you start going down the road of bootlegs and quite literally wrote the book on Van Halen bootlegs. What are some of the bootlegs that you feel are of quality that rival some of the studio stuff?
Oh my goodness. Nothing's going to rival the studio stuff. You know, there's over 100 variations of bootlegs, and look, I love vinyl bootleg. That's my niche. I absolutely love vinyl bootleg. And there's probably over 100 Van Halen bootlegs and variations of. And by that I mean, well, you know, one record that came out three different ways. Japan 79 came out in black, blue, and red. So I count that as three. So how do I answer that question?
Well, I guess let me put it a different way. My experience with bootlegs has always been the sound quality is variable. I mean, that's just the nature of bootlegs. But there are some that are just phenomenal and really kind of add a lot to the story of the band, especially the part of the show, which is Eddie's solo, which can vary immensely year to year, show to show. What are some of the shows that you would highly recommend as some of the top bootlegs out there?
This one to me is, this just came out a couple of years ago. You know, we went through this vinyl pressings of audience recordings for decades, you know, since the 70s. And Die Laughing came out probably early 80s, late 70s, from October 15th to 77. And that was one of Van Halen's last shows in the Pasadena area. That is a great quality bootleg. Zero, which really hasn't been out on vinyl. It came out as a CD in 2003. Those were the Gene Simmons demos. And there's six songs on there that made the album, a little bit different versions. And then the six songs that didn't make the record. I may be off by a song, but that quality of that CD is unreal. You can pop that in your car and listen to it like you were listening to something you just bought from Tower Records, you know? And the bootlegs have gone through transitions. Well, about a year, year and a half ago, Mad Hatter Records out of Europe came out with, out of nowhere, came up with an album called Catch a Rising Star. And this was a performance by Van Halen in Wichita, Kansas, in which nobody ever knew that this existed. Nobody knew of this play date. It was crazy. It came out of nowhere. And it's a soundboard recording, a literal soundboard recording. And it's the whole show. They played a discotheque, a nightclub. And this is a bootleg.
Is this like one of their off nights on their first tour with Journey or something like that? Is that?
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, Marshall Borrell? Yeah. Would take the band and those dates that they were open, he'd get them booked. You know, this is how to get the name out there. This is how to make a few extra dollars. And this was one of the times that they did that. Well, Pogo's, which is the discotheque down in Wichita, used to run a show called Catch a Rising Star, and they would bring in new artists. Pat Benatar played there and several others. And Van Halen played that show, but nobody ever knew that it existed. Well, Mad Hatter put it out on Lathe Cut Records. So they only put out, I think, 10 or 12 records. That was it. It never went any further than that. Finally, somebody decided that they were going to put it out on a regular pressing, and it really hit the market here about a year ago. It came out in three or four different colors. But boy, if you really want to catch Van Halen at its earliest and on its first world tour and sounding great, that's the record to do it.
Wow. That's amazing that early stuff like that still turns up. Because that video of them in Fresno just popped up a couple of weeks or now months ago. Is there a lot of stuff out there you think that you know exists but hasn't come to the surface yet?
I've got a couple of things I'm thinking about letting go. I've heard of some stuff out in California that still hasn't hit surface yet. Yeah, there's some things out there. You know, the 78, 79 footage of Fresno that you've been seeing, you know, actually that came out, wow, years and years and years ago, but the quality was so terrible. It wasn't even watchable. It was just terrible. And then about, 2013, the guy who had gone out and videotaped it actually started cleaning up the master reels, started making them look a lot nicer. Those master reels are about the same as an HD quality digital. And he started making them look really, really nice. I don't know whatever happened, you know, but now Fresno Restoration Films is, I think that's the name of it, has now got it. And they've restored a lot of it. And they did it frame by frame by frame. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see that it finally has come out. But boy, you know, I wish it had come out that way when it originally came out a long time ago.
Look, I'm just glad that it exists. I don't care if I'm watching it 40 years later. It's actually quite interesting, again, that this has been in someone's garage and they finally put in the time to be able to restore it to where you could watch it and truly enjoy it.
Well, I often wonder, you know, Gazzeri, where they used to play down on the strip in LA. He was a big camera guy. He used to tape things down there. It's known that he used to come out and film bands that were down there. So I often wondered whether or not that Van Halen was ever filmed or not back in the club days. I'd be interested in going through his collection just to see.
I bet he's got a lot of weird stuff too. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned there are some things that you know exist that haven't come to the surface yet. Can you share what some of those are?
I know that there is a complete show, I think minus one song from 1974, early 74. May actually of 74. I know that that's out there. I know there's a complete show from 75 out there. That's 2 hours and 30 minutes long.
We're talking audio then.
Not video.
Okay.
And actually that 74 is actually, I think it's almost a complete show. If not, it's missing only maybe one song and it's got Mark Stone on bass. So
I would imagine those were taped and likely current property of someone very close to the band, or at least that was close to the band back then.
I'm thinking at that time they had friends that followed them around. So I'm sure somebody had, remember those little cassette decks that you hit the eject on and pop up and you carry it around with you. I'm sure that that's probably what it was taped on.
Now you've heard it. What is the reason that those don't surface?
I know they call us hoarders or people hoarding for that. I don't look at it as hoarding. I don't have permission to release it. The person or persons that I got it from have specifically said, hey, you can't release this. I'll share it with you, but don't release it. Until I get that, then it stays. And I'm not the only one like that. There's several people around. I mean, there's a lot out there that get this same request in that bootleg circle. Not just me, but I'm sure under Pink Floyd and Beatles and all. Hey, keep this under wraps for now. So as I was asked, that's what I've been doing. So.
Yeah. And you've heard it. What does it add to the Van Halen legacy?
To me, oh wow. Hey, that 74, what's cool about that is it's Mark Stone on bass, a whole show of Mark Stone on bass. It's a little bit different sound. There are some songs on there that haven't been released, some cover songs that still have not been released. I think 3 in the Morning is on that, which was a B.B. King cover, mm-hmm. is on that. I believe there's a Grand Funk Railroad cover on that. That was not She's a Wonderful. It's something else. I can't remember off the top of my head.
All right. Well, maybe one day someone will give the green light and the rest of us will be able to hear this.
Look at that. A code of ethics among bootleggers.
Yeah. Honor among thieves. Look, a lot of these recordings, again, the quality wasn't great. It's before the band was fully formed and kind of had their, you know, their direction and the je ne sais quoi that is Van Halen. So sometimes these sort of recordings can be misinterpreted and be negative to the legacy. So I can understand why people would want to, you know, be very precious about how far they get out there.
Well, you know, there's one, Takes on Tucson is the name of it, from 79. That was just released here in the last couple of years by Mad Hatter also. It's a soundboard recording. And right now, man, that's a hot album. That boy, that's them at their pinnacle. That if you get a chance to listen to that, do. It is unreal. It's out there on, you know, it's called Takes on Tucson. From 79. And another one, the Tucson one and the San Diego one, is really, really good.
You got into Van Halen quite early. You're located in the Midwest. Did you catch them on those early tours?
I caught them in 79 and 80. So, yeah, they came out here in October of 1980 and September of 79. Yeah, I got to see both shows. That was pretty cool. That'll get you going.
And I imagine, I mean, multiple versions of Van Halen throughout the years. Your sweet spot is that early period, those first 4 to 6 albums?
Yeah, it is. I'm not a big – I like the first through Fair Warning. I'm not a huge fan of Diver Down, although one of my favorite songs is on that. And I don't – 1984, I never cared for that album. It's got some good stuff on there. Don't get me wrong. Panama is great. And there's a few, Hot for Teacher's great, but I still always go back to 1 and 2 and Fair Warning. So,
yeah, they're hard to beat. Women and Children First seems a little bit slapdash, but it still has that energy that I love. Especially Dave is really drunk on a couple of those songs. I'm assuming it's drunk, but
there's some bootleg recordings of those sessions out there too.
Oh yeah.
Instrumental. And there's a couple with vocals. I think they're changed a little bit from the versions that were actually put out.
Okay. Are those out for regular folks or those?
Yeah, there's a CD of it that came out back in the 90s. And then Mad Hatter Records released a Women and Children First Sessions, I think was the name of it. And those were really high quality. And I'm hearing another one's coming out too pretty soon.
Ooh, okay. Many outtakes from those early years.
Not that you're going to find. I mean, the Zero records from Gene Simmons, yes. Warner Brothers, I think Greg Renoff mentioned that on your show. There was 27 or 28 songs recorded. Those have made it out. We haven't heard a whole lot from Van Halen, too. There is a few. I can't think of any others off the top of my head.
Mm. Now, you have a very unique pressing of Van Halen 1. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I've got this is an actual pressing using the original stamper plates out of Jacksonville for Van Halen 1. It is a white and blue and pink splash vinyl. It's a one-off, or like I used to call them, midnight runs, where the press operator would stop the presses and put a new puck in. And in this case, they put the white, blue, and pink in, and they pressed it. It was the only one that was made. My understanding is it was given to a gentleman named Tom Bonowitz. Tom was a huge, huge Van Halen collector. I think he worked for the band too for a little while, but he was just a huge collector, and that stayed in his collection until his untimely death a few years ago. I was lucky enough to be able to get that record and bring it home here. Yeah, it's a one of a kind. It's the only one known out there.
Midnight Pressing. Any particular connection between the pressing company and Tom Bonowitz?
Not that I'm aware of. I know he used to go over to Capitol Records pressing plant, which is over in Pennsylvania. And Capitol used to do some pressings for Warner Brothers. At least that pressing plant did. It was owned by Capitol. That's the only time that I'm aware of that. And if I'm not mistaken, the Jacksonville is in Illinois or Indiana, one of those two. So I'm not sure how it got to him or if he was with the band at the time. So I'm not positive on that.
And I'm assuming that's something that will stay with you until you leave this earth. Or is it something you would consider selling or trading at some point?
No. I've been offered a few dollars for it, and I've turned it down. I've turned at least two offers down. Some were just throwing numbers out there. I had two serious offers here about 6 months ago, well over the $1,000 mark, and I turned them down. So,
okay, all right. So, I'm assuming there is a dollar price out there. Would you say no to 10 grand?
I probably would. My wife wouldn't.
No, I'm kidding. She'd kill you and sell it.
No, you know what? There's been a lot of times where I've talked about, and I've sold my collection once and I got it, most of it back, and I've sold it, some of parts of it again, and I've gotten it back. But every time she's always told me, do not sell, do not sell. You're going to regret it. Do not sell. She has always said that. So I'm thankful that she backs me on this.
She knows you better than you know you.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, definitely. I'm stupid enough to let it go twice. She told me not to.
Well, that's good. You and I are very similar. We both married women that are smarter than us. Let's talk a little bit about Merry Melodies, because that's a collectible that is potentially attainable to most people who listen to the show. It's not that uncommon, but it's got a very unique story to it. Can you share the story of Merry Melodies?
Oh, geez, you're going to try to make me remember this. Let's see. I believe it was Eddie Van Halen had shared with a friend of his in the band Angel they were releasing, or he let them listen to Van Halen's recording of You Really Got Me. Well, Angel, the band, was also going to record it, and their release date was going to be prior to Van Halen 1. So Warner Brothers, in their sense of urgency, decided to go ahead and release the Merry Melodies with those tracks on it before Angel did. Hence the red vinyl, which I just never understood why they didn't do more colored vinyl. It just drives me nuts. Mm. But they didn't have the logo at that time, the one that we're all familiar with. They went with that mountain logo, which I kind of like. It was used in some promotions in the California region for them on their first tour also, which I thought was pretty unique.
I've heard the story that you call it the mountain logo, that was designed by Alex. And I've only heard that rumor back in the day. Is that true? Any truth to that? Have you heard that as well?
I don't know if it's true or not. I heard the same thing. You know, actually, their first logo was designed by Mark Stone.
The ball and one? The kind of the round edges and stuff?
Yeah, the round edged one. Yeah. Actually, you'll see them using or wearing the shirts mm-hmm. with that logo on it a lot in 78, 79. Then they went to the mountain logo, which, yeah, I'd heard the same thing. Alex had done it. But if you look at some of their older posters, for when they were coming up, those posters between 74 and 77, a lot of those posters were done by them, was done by Alex or Eddie, and they're all hand drawn. So you can see some of the, same familiar techniques on that.
So Warner Brothers decided to release this Merry Melodies record, and it's on red vinyl. It has the old Van Halen logo, and about half the songs from Van Halen 1 are on this. Is there a number, a quantity that you're familiar with of how many were pressed?
Nope. I've been in some discussions with this. I had it on pretty good authority from a gentleman in Southern California that this record was counterfeited. In all my days, and you probably around more vinyl people than I am, but I remember back in the radio days when they would send promos out, they never sent them out sealed, ever. It was always when we got them at the radio station, they were always open, never sealed or shrink wrapped. Well, here we are. We're finding now that a lot of these are shrink wrapped or they're sealed. And I'm not seeing it recently. I've seen it for the last 20 years. And I talked to a gentleman who owns a record. He did own several record stores down in Southern California. And he is 100% positive that some were counterfeited.
I've heard that too. And it's quite honestly, it's not a hard product to counterfeit because all of those songs exist in high quality digital format. So anyone who wants to knock one off and has a record press can.
Exactly. Here, I have another unique one here. This is a record that was given to Peaches of Atlanta. And I think it was given to the band also. There's another gentleman in our group. And I think it's David who has this, but, they gave Warner Brothers had a kind of an award made for these places that helped promote Van Halen. And what they did was is they took the Van Halen 1 cover and they put it in a frame. And then they had this red vinyl record with the Van Halen 1 label as its center. So you had all of Van Halen 1, side one is on this label. And the illusion is that this is Van Halen 1, as we see it, in red vinyl, in this award frame. And they gave it to Peaches of Atlanta, and like I said, and they gave it to the band, and there were some others. There wasn't very many of them. Well, if you get to looking at the vinyl really closely, it's got a wide, wide dead wax on it. And the serial number the matrix number is the same as Merry Melodies. Huh. So what Warner had done was they went out and they put the label for Van Halen 1 over this EP label. And then they put it in this frame and gave it to everybody saying it was Van Halen 1. Quite the collectible. But I've got one hanging on my wall. It's really kind of cool.
Oh, and again, to the people who are listening to this episode, I want to post some photos of some of these collectibles, the Midnight Pressing, the Peaches plaque, or I'm not sure what you call it there, but those sort of things. I'll put links in those on this episode page if you want to see the physical objects that we're talking about here. Merry Melodies, it was pressed back in the day, was distributed to radio stations primarily. Is that the purpose or trajectory of it?
Yeah, they did it to, I think they started out at 30 or so radio stations. They got such airplay, they started boosting the amount of radio stations that were getting it. So they made more and they put more out there. I'm just really curious how many they made. I have no idea. It just seems like you see a lot of them online, whether it be eBay or pick your favorite vinyl place. Just seems that there's a lot of them out there for a promo.
Yeah. And you could find them for anywhere between $50 and $100, I think, is about what they go for these days. And I've also seen them autographed by members of the band. And when I've seen them autographed, it's often most of the band is on there. It's not just one member or two. It's generally all four. So I would imagine that was relatively early in their career, and perhaps they sold some of these at shows or at personal appearances?
Well, I don't – back in the day, I maybe date myself a little bit here, but back in the day, bands would, to promote themselves, go to Tower Records or your local record store in your area. And for us, it was Budget Tapes and Records here in Rapid. And they used to do those things. I don't think they do that anymore. So all four, of course, are going to make the appearance. 1,000 people show up and get albums signed. You know, I always figure 50% of those probably went in the trash or went by way of or the garbage chute. But, you know, there's still quite a few out there. I've got a Merry Melodies that was signed by the band in its entirety. They were in Texas at a radio station down there, and that's where it got signed.
And is it signed just their names, or is it personalized in some way, like with extra text beyond their names?
Well, I got to looking at this record. On the one that I have, it just has their names. But if you look really closely, it looks like all the stuff that they wrote on there was erased off. Ugh. I don't know why, because that's common with them. Back in 78, 79, maybe early 79, they used to write stuff on there. They would write, you know, "Hey, Dave, you're the coolest," or whatever. And they personalized their signatures, which is really neat. And I thought that would have been neat on this, but some idiot. Actually, I knew the guy that worked at the radio station. He got it for me. But he had it for quite a while, but I don't know why the heck you'd erase everything off of there.
Some people just don't have the foresight, I guess. Now, around the same time of Merry Melodies, the record company, Warner Brothers, was experimenting with how to present the band. It feels like they weren't quite sure of the marketing plan or how to get the band out there. And they tried a few different versions of the Van Halen 1 album cover. The one that you fell in love with wasn't the first. There's an early slick that was created, I understand, of a picture of the band. I think Greg Renoff calls it the Clash photo. Is that something you dug up, or what is the story of that?
No, a lot of people knew about that. There was an earlier, you know, format for, you know, for that first album, and there was some pictures out there, but that was about it. My background on it was that there was somewhere between 5 and 7 that were released that got out into the public. I've got one. Greg Renoff was looking for it, you know, to help with his book, Van Halen Rising. And I was lucky enough to have one to be able to send to him. Funny enough, I just found another one this weekend, framed, up for sale, actually up for auction, this last Friday. And I wasn't able to get it, unfortunately. It was also with the one that we know, Van Halen 1, together framed both. Neither one had been folded yet. So I thought that was kind of a unique presentation, but I couldn't afford to get that one.
So a different cover actually came up, alternative to the one that we know as the alternative.
Right. It actually used that mountain logo that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. It also has got the blue border. There's a filter on it that kind of gives them kind of a blue tint. But Greg Renoff's right, or whoever had mentioned that, it does look like a punk record or the Clash. And then the bad part about it is also Dave's eyes are closed.
It's an awful photo. It really
is. Yeah, it is. It's terrible. And I believe it was taken at Dave's house too, or his dad's house, with, you know, at the time. But yeah, it is. It's a terrible photo. I'm glad they didn't go with it, because now that I look back, remember what I said when I first seen the band or became new of the band was walking through a record store, walking through Kmart, and went, "Wow, cool cover." I don't know if I would have done that with the other cover.
Especially with that photo. So is that alternative photo, the one that you just talked about that went up for sale last week, are images of that available to see?
Of the one that went up for sale?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I have it saved somewhere on my computer. I can send it to you.
Can you?
Then I've got the one that I just put up. I've got on my wall, too. I'll send you both.
Okay. And what do these things go for? Like, what did that auction eventually go for?
I think that auction finally went for, I want to say $600 or $700.
Wow.
Between $600 and $700, which actually I thought was probably right about right. I was thinking right around $700 it would go for. But and actually there was another auction that for the album cover that we know as Van Halen 1 signed. That auction was this weekend, and I believe that one went for over $1,000 or over $1,500.
Wow. Now, this Van Halen collecting community on Facebook, it's invite only, I would imagine, only for true Van Halen collectors, no spectators.
Look, we were up around 2000. I've got a great group. I've got great administrators. Man, I couldn't do it without them. We were up over a couple of thousand people. And we finally started going through and thinning the herd. We want people to come in and be involved and show us your swag, man. Show us what you got. I don't care what it is, man. If you got a Pez dispenser of Eddie Van Halen, I want to see it. Steve or Michael or Rodney, we've got two gentlemen on our group, or three, I should say, Rodney and Simon and Ron. They post something every single day. It's like a complete history of Van Halen day by day by day. If it's tickets, posters, film, whatever was done on that day, they have something for it. And they post every single day. We have over 20,000 pictures on our site.
I don't have anything to contribute, but I would look at it like a museum. I'd be fascinated by the pictures and the things that come across, even if it's not vinyl. Like you say, ticket stubs, backstage pass, kind of old laminates, T-shirts, those sort of things. Because those, yeah.
I've got, we have a gentleman in Texas, Steve. The guy's a backstage laminate pass fool. I have never seen so many backstage passes in my life. Never. Incredible. And his poster collection, he's got some of the rarest posters ever in his collection. It's ridiculous. Michael also, Michael Schenkel, who is another huge vinyl collector, Roger, another huge vinyl collector. These guys, they know their stuff. Ron Higgins, incredible, knows his history of the band very, very well. So I'm very proud that the people that we do have in our group contribute the way that they do. It's very unselfish, and I appreciate everything that they've done.
Now, I see in your collection, you also have some pressing plates. What are those from? How did you end up getting those pressing plates?
I was in Wyoming, work related, and a friend of mine in California, Roger, who I've known for between 25 and 30 years, he contacts me. He says, "Hey, look at these. These plates are up for sale." And I said, "Oh my gosh, I've got to have those, because everybody has a bucket list in vinyl. I don't care who you are. If you collect vinyl, you have a bucket list, and or a holy grail or a white whale or whatever you want to call it." And one of the things that was always on my list was stamper plates. I always wanted a set of those. And the funny thing is, with stamper plates, they're only good for about 1,500 pressings, and they throw them away.
Right.
You know. And I thought, oh my word, I'd love to have one. Well, here they are: Van Halen 1 side A, Van Halen 1 side B, and then the release for "You Really Got Me," and what is it, Atomic Punks, is up for sale. And they're out of Holland, Netherlands. And the album, these are the mother stamper plates. So the stamper plates were made from these mothers. You could actually play these metal plates.
Right.
So the Van Halen 1 album ones are for all the records that were made in Germany, Belgium, Netherlands, France, for the 1978 release.
Right.
And then "You Really Got Me" was for the Netherlands ones. I got them from a journalist in the Netherlands named Bob Hagges, I believe his name is. He's a freelance music journalist who is actually quite big. I think last week he was doing an article on Jeff Lynne and records. He's in the vinyl community. That's his niche. I was very lucky to get them. And wow, I take him out every other day and look at him. So
have you played him before? Have you tried to play it?
Yeah, I did. I think I ruined my needle, but yeah, I stuck that Van Halen 1 on there. Well, I called him back. I'm counting the song spacings on there. You know, the track spacings, and I'm counting them, and I'm going, "Hey, this one doesn't look right. There's only five songs. There should be six. One side's six songs, one side's five songs." And he actually had to unpack it and play it, because the separation band was so slight in that mother plate that you couldn't tell that there was two different songs. He had to play it again, and I got those that I can't. It's just dirt cheap. I'm so stoked on those plates. Let me tell you.
All right. Well, don't sell them, okay, Mike? Hang on.
No,
to
actually, I got a friend in the Netherlands who if anything ever happens or if I have to get rid of them, that's who they're going to. So
okay. Back in 78, 79, Van Halen was touring at their merch booths. Did they have a lot of stuff? Was it mainly just a couple of t-shirt selections? That's it. Or did they truly have posters and things beyond just a t-shirt design or two?
You know, I'm going to be honest. I don't remember. I would have to think that they did. And the reason why is, do you remember back in the day, you would get, you send it off to your favorite band, you know, whoever, Kiss, Pink Floyd, whoever. And they would send you back a merch catalog. Do you remember those?
Yeah. Sometimes they came stuck in the record sleeve as well. I have one for Judas Priest Screaming for Vengeance, where I could order all sorts of Judas Priest stuff direct from the band.
I've got one here from Van Halen Merchandising from 79. Actually, I have it in my hand right now. Mm. And they had peel-off stickers and buttons and tour books and t-shirts. Noel Monk was great at this cross-merchandising. I think he ran his own pressing plant for t-shirts and posters and stuff. I swear to God he did. And all this stuff is in there. And I would have to believe that at the merch tables, they were doing that. I just don't remember because, boy, I'll tell you what, when you're at the door and you're 18 years old, they didn't care much about the merch table. I wanted to get a seat to where I could see the band. So
Mike, this has been quite a mind-blowing experience. I really appreciate you taking us through the Van Halen collectible community. Is there a holy grail out there? You mentioned the bucket list and things like that. What is your white whale? What's out there that you want to make part of your collection someday?
Wow. The 1984 red vinyl is really up there. I've put ads out looking for that thing. I really, really want that one. I haven't come across it yet. I'd like to get I need to get some of my test pressings back. And I would love to find the US plates, stamper plates or mother plates for the US versions. I'd really like to find those, but, few and far between, might be another 20, 30 years before I get my hands on anything along those lines again. So,
do you collect any like post David Lee Roth stuff? I know Balance is very difficult to find on vinyl. I believe For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge, there's that chalkboard issue with the phone number on it.
Yeah, I've got both of those on vinyl. And I have both signed also. Yeah, I kind of collected. You know, there's a CD version of Balance also that came out that's only got, instead of the two twins, it's only got the one because they thought it was a bad thing over in Japan. That's kind of a collectible. And I think there's an extra song on that also. But yeah, there isn't a whole lot after into the Hagar era. I'm okay with the Hagar era. I think it was what it was and it was good. But there isn't a whole lot to collect out there for it. There really isn't that the cut picture discs, young or, you know, the shape discs, those are out there. There was a purple vinyl. I think it was out of Italy, a 45. Don't Tell Me, I think was the name of it, but that's really just about it. I mean, there's other stuff, posters, but
slim pickings.
It really is.
The stuff from like 1978, 1979, it is such a unique time in history. It's also a time where a lot of people didn't really, you know, hang on to things. There wasn't a lot of cameras or certainly no video cameras. Audio equipment wasn't, you know, commonplace like it was a few years later. And here was this young upstart band that a lot of people just passively paid attention to until they started dominating the world. So stuff from that 78, 79 era is just gold.
Oh, it is. You know, and Eddie keeps saying too, we got nothing. We have no extras in the vault. We don't have anything. We didn't film anything. You know, and the more a lot of us start digging into it, we go, yeah, it's out there. You're just, you know, for lack of better words, BSing us. So I just put it together and put it out because I'm not sure if the band's going to keep going, especially after everything that's happened lately. So who knows? I wish, you know, there's a 13 record 45 set in red vinyl and in black vinyl, and it's all the Japanese singles. I think there's 13 of them with all the original covers. And the covers from Japan during those eras from 78 to 84, man, those are phenomenal covers. They are really, really cool inserts. Mm-hmm. And it's a great collection for somebody who wants to get started. Most of us already have all of it anyway, so yeah. Except on, it wasn't on red vinyl.
Yeah, I saw the video of it out there, and that looks like a pretty impressive collection. All right, so Mike, thank you so much for joining us here on the Vinyl Guide and sharing all this. And again, any pictures of the stuff that you're happy to share, the midnight pressing or this 1984 picture disc or the red vinyl stuff you're keeping your eye out for, please feel free to share. I'm happy to send them to the audience, and hopefully you'll have a bunch of people out there looking for you as well, helping you finally close that white whale.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Oh, man. I can talk Van Halen all day, especially vinyl, especially to someone as knowledgeable as Michael Cassis, author of the book Underground Van Halen Vinyl. I'm going to put the link to that book in this episode page, as well as links to many of the performances that we talked about on today's show. Thanks again, Michael. And that is it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Again, please support us by going to our Patreon page, patreon.com/vinylguide. If you can, if you cannot, please share this episode and tell all your friends about this podcast. And please write us a nice review. You can do that on Apple Podcasts. I think you can do it on Spotify or Stitcher or a few others. And we would certainly appreciate that. We know not everyone can help support us, and not everyone is in a position these days to be able to help out. If you can, there's patreon.com/vinylguide. If you cannot, please help us spread the word of the Vinyl Guide podcast. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.